So when I tell people I'm a curator, the typical response is like, ah, how lucky, what a fantastic job. So at the end, obviously it is a fantastic job because working with artists is great. But at the end, when they ask me what is the curator job, the truth is the curator job is making lists. And the first list is, what shows you're going to do that year. The second list is what artists are going to be in the show. Then you make the list of what artworks are going to be in the show for the insurance. How expensive the artworks for the show. And so basically it's it's funny. There is a big level of creativity maybe in a text about art. But the day-to-day work of a curator is really about making lists. And I was thinking that probably in that sense, it's not so different from the work of someone working in a gallery. So someone working in a gallery will start making lists. So the first list is, okay, I need a gallery. So you make a list of the places you can go and see. You try to, find a place to rent for your gallery. And there are two ways around of this kind of project and model. And one is I find the place I love and I adapt my gallery to the architecture of the place, or I have an idea of architecture because I know what type of art I want to show and I look for that place. Obviously, it depends a bit what your interests are. If you are going to work with bidimensional photographs and painting, light becomes kind of a crucial point in picking a space. If you're working more with installation and conceptual artists, it doesn't really matter. It's more important that the place has an atmosphere. And then it's you start making lists on artists you would want. And I think this is something very fascinating because when young artists come to me asking about galleries, begging them to help them find the gallery, and I don't like very much to have to go to galleries and say, look at the work of this. It's kind of a weird... I kind of like to invite galleries to see shows where they can find talent they like, but not necessarily kind of be the intermediary to finding a gallery. But the one advice I give artists, which I think used to be something artists did much more and do much less now, is... artists should pick their gallery. It used to be like this. It used to be that artists started going to the shows of the galleries they found interesting. And then they would start talking to the people there because they shared kind of a common feeling with that gallery. And then maybe that would bring to, why don't you show me your work? Because if you had an interesting conversation and you look like someone who is stimulating, intelligent, and kind of has a thought on a show, it's much easier that someone who runs a gallery can be interested in your work. And so I kind of feel, in a way, it's better if it is the artists who pick the people they want to work with than necessarily the other way around. And then obviously picking artists is something very strange. It can be something very mathematical, like, okay, this works with this gallery, has done this show, I think I like the work, and he's also doing the right type of project. And it can be totally visceral. It can be you see something and you feel, I don't know why, but this thing sticks with me. And for some reason, I believe in it. And strange enough, that's one of the best ways to pick art you're going to be involved with, because usually it gives your relationship with the art something special. There are obviously sometimes artists that for some reason in some place are the golden boys or golden girls, and then everybody wants them because maybe they have talent, they are exactly in the right time, in the right place where there is a global interest. And so those, in a way, it's kind of you're lucky if you meet them in the time when they need you. And obviously if you've been generous to an artist, even if they have success, it's easier that they would kind of remain faithful to you, even if it's not a granted, because I was talking the other day with this Italian gallery, and for example, in Italy, the market is of contemporary art is structured in such a way that artworks can make it up to, let's exaggerate, 30, 40,000 euros. It's very, very difficult that contemporary art collectors jump and start buying for 100, 150. If they buy that much, then they're buying probably more established works, maybe at bigger prices, but it's things that run at auction or are really expensive. There is not the type of client that maybe you can find in London or in New York or maybe in China that buys artworks for 100, 150, 80, that type of market. And so if you have an artist that suddenly becomes internationally relevant and starts having important galleries abroad, and his prices start raising, it kind of becomes physiological that you lose the artist. So many times it's not that artists abandon their first galleries, but it's like the first galleries cannot sustain that market, so they can't sell at a lower price. This is a big problem for Italian galleries. They say, you know, the artist starts working with Tania Bonakdar and the prices go up in 1 month of 15-20%. And this can mean completely closing an Italian market. So some galleries in Italy have been very intelligent about helping artists produce projects in this case as a way of sustaining, like keeping the link with the artists. You kind of, you know, help museums do a project, or because it's really difficult to sustain. And so this kind of growth is physiological. So in a way, if you work as a young artist, it's kind of, it should be kind of a given that you find artists, sustain them, and if they're successful, it might even be that at one point they leave you. And your kind of trade-off is you should have kept enough work that when they make success with very powerful galleries, you can capitalize it on it also. And this is one big difference of what's happened to the gallery world compared to the 70s, for example. In the 70s, galleries would, on average, buy the whole show. And, you know, if you interview old galleries like Sperone or Sonnabend, they would tell you that it's not what you sell of the show you have that makes, it's what you keep, you don't sell, that makes you a good gallery, because it's what you can sell 20 years later if you've worked well. The problem is that now the prices of the art world are such that it's very difficult to capitalize and hold work for the time it takes for this spread. So now artists, galleries, I mean, maybe keep one work for a show, but cannot really afford to buy the whole show from the artist and keep it away in a deposit until it's the right time to sell. So it's become a lot more difficult to bridge that, the delay in history on recognizing the talent that maybe you've helped grow and develop. Okay, I have a question for you. Has any of you bought ever an artwork? No, because it's funny, I was talking to galleries and I realized that in a way, strangely, some of the most successful galleries I have met started as collectors. Like, their desire to collect is what kind of pushed them to support artists. It was like, if I push the right artist, I can buy him before he's expensive. And it's something I had never really thought of, and I'm not at all a collector, I'm a curator, and I never think of buying artworks, and when I think, it's because the artists have already become, it's usually I think I should have bought him 5 years ago, I'm an idiot, I worked with him when he was super young, and now, but the truth is I can't really think of work as buying it and owning it, which doesn't mean necessarily exchange value. I mean, many of these people really buy the work because they're really passionate about artists' work, and they feel that when they see great work, they feel the need to own it. And it's a very kind of healthy way to relate to art if you are thinking of becoming a gallerist dealer, because it's it kind of makes very natural the relationship that artworks go through transactions, and it's a normal way. I met this young gallerist in Italy who said, you know, I thought I was going to become a curator, But then I thought, I want to become a curator so I can buy before the gallerists. And then I said, okay, maybe I'm better as a gallerist. And I said, yeah, because real curators never buy, really, the art world. I mean, you get sometimes gifts or a work in exchange for writing for free for a catalog, but it's kind of hard if you start thinking of the work as market. It's very hard to work on it as a project of art. But it's an interesting aspect of relating to the work. How big is the art market here, or how small?
It's small. I mean, you mean the euro amount, the number of galleries,
the number of people running around it in a way.
Well, I would say like the number of people.
I mean, how many galleries? Maybe we can start.
There's, I would say, five galleries with one working internationally, most actively.
Which is what?
Maybe about 20 collectors that are interested in contemporary art. The statistics are difficult to get because a lot of the sales happen from the artist studio.
Mm-hmm.
Still, but there is statistics for the sales from the galleries.
And how long have they been working?
3 years.
3 years.
Ah, okay, so it's quite young.
Yeah, they're young. The galleries worked for another gallery in Tallinn before, and then started her own with the financial backer who's local. I think the first, probably the first and second year, they did a really aggressive round of fairs with pretty good results.
Yeah, but they still, I mean, they're doing Nada, they're doing New York,
they
they did Torino last year.
Yeah, and they're in Vienna right now.
You're a very quiet group. Probably, I mean, I think, as sadly as it is, one artist once told me this, and I think as a beginning is, an artwork should always cost at least 3 times its cost of production, if there's cost of production. And I had never thought of it like this, but then some conceptual works have no cost of production and they're worth maybe more. I'm not saying it's the only, but to me it's something very fascinating that, for example, now most painting is conceptual painting. Yet a big conceptual painting, which is not painted by the artist, is more expensive than a small conceptual painting, not painted by the artist. This is something very perverse. No? Because in a way, it could be that the better painting is the small one, it could be more valuable. I mean, paintings are, it's strange that they are sold by the meter, because the expense of the canvas and the paint is so little, makes such a small difference on, you know, what is the price of the idea and the project behind it. I mean, I think you look for similar works that have been exchanged. You look if they've ever sold anything to some collectors. And I don't believe there's certain amounts under which it's scandalous. Because I think your market is built on selling and producing works. Not everybody agrees with me. Some people tell you that, you know, under, I don't know, 3,000 euros, it's offensive and you can't sell anything. I think it really depends. I mean, obviously, if a project takes you maybe a year to produce and the amount of work, not so much the size of the project, is something you've invested. A lot of an artist has worked 1 year to make a project, then it kind of should, this labor should be worth something. And then you kind of compare similar type of works by different artists and also a bit what markets you are selling the works on, because it's really no point making prices that no one is willing to pay. So a price should be kind of something that gets collectors interested. If the prices are such that no one gets near the works, I don't think good collectors fall for the fact that if something is expensive, they're going to buy it. Actually, good collectors want to buy always a little less of what is the right price. The ones who are used to, you know, discovering young talents and following. But it's really, really, I mean, I don't know, it's very hard to price, but when sometimes they tell me a price which is outrageous, you kind of have a, the other day I was talking to this Italian sculptor, he was saying, I was thinking, this work, it's big, should be 40,000 euros. And I was like, you know, I think it's, I know this collection bought Mark Mander's installation for 40,000 euros 5 years ago. You're nowhere close to where Mark Mander's was 5 years ago, no? Like now maybe Mark Mander's is more expensive, but so you try to find like a common sense, because the truth is, obviously for young artists, there's no auction price to check. And so if anything else has been sold by someone else, you can start from kind of comparing prices. But it's true that with young artists, for example, in Italy, young artists, the same young artist is a bit cheaper than the same artist in the US. And also because in Italy we have VAT at 22% on art. So, you know, on the final price, it makes quite a difference from Italy to Germany, where VAT is 9%. So you have to kind of keep the first price down so that the final price is similar. Because if not, all your artists are more expensive than in another country, no one will buy in Italy. I don't know. I have good collectors are collectors who, in a way, buy before the market and are not chasing what is becoming exciting on the market. So they buy because they think an artist's work is intelligent, stimulating. And also good collectors are collectors who buy what they love, not the name. No, like now many collectors tell you, I have this, that, that, that. But then you go and look and they have really small, insignificant pieces by very famous artists. And it's not necessarily the most interesting collection, not to have very small Olaf Eliasson photo, very small. Maybe it's more interesting to have less famous artists with important pieces. This is what I mean. Then obviously it's a bit random, no? The judgment. Some people can tell you maybe good collectors are people who buy and sell at the right time in the market. I don't like collectors who sell a lot because I think the borderline between collecting and dealer then is very frail. It's like this Italian collector now, Panza di Biumo, who has a foundation in near Milano. He was very big in supporting American minimalist and especially Californian art of the 70s. So he bought Maria Norman, he bought a lot of James Turrell and all these artists. But the truth is, in those times, he was more a dealer than a collector. He was buying six and keeping one and selling the others on the market. So it's obviously now he's very old. He's kept along a lot of work. Some he's donated to the Guggenheim. He's become a collector posthumously. But the people who knew him at the time, he was very much a dealer. Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with being a dealer. It's just strange if you're a dealer and you pretend to be a collector. Usually dealers do have good collections because if that's your job, you would be crazy not to keep some of the good works for you. And it's like galleries. Usually when a gallerist is finishing his career, their collections are quite amazing. It depends if the gallery has children or not, if the gallery donates to some institution.
The institutions do not want the whole collection.
No, this is many times the problem. They want only the best.
And the owner only wants to give
the whole
collection.
Yeah, this is a big problem. And they want it all exhibited, not just part.
Yes.
Not so good on international collectors. I can't remember the name. There's these Belgian collectors who are very famous. They collected conceptual art in the 60s and 70s with incredible international conceptual art. And they have this very strange house, they told me, but I've never been, where you go and they show you these, you know, there's not much to see because it was really conceptual art. So there are little drawings, instructions, and that's to me very fascinating that you would be so brave as to... Well, I mean, in Italy, there were many collectors buying in those years. Obviously, a lot of it then disappears. There's this great collector who's died last year, and the sons already, when he was sick, were selling quietly a lot of the work. Because the truth is, now art is so valuable that if you're not immensely rich and your father has bought exactly the right things and you don't have a passion, there's really no reason why to hold on to... But this guy had bought Eva Hesse in the 70s in Italy, had bought like really great artworks, but the family is selling all. And the sad thing is they're selling before even having one show of the collection. I understand the selling, but maybe you should try to have it out once to see, have a book, and then, okay, if you want to disperse it and need the money, I it's hard to judge someone, no?
It's hard to picture that you put so much work and so life's work.
But you know... It's true, but you know, so few sons of collectors become collectors. If you, I mean, in my statistics, it's not something quite hereditary. It's as if this obsession of parents, kind of the children, I mean, in the better cases, they understand they have some great works and they hold the great ones and get rid of the rest. But many times it's like you're kind of in conflict with that passion in a way. And so it's kind of, they're ready to let go of. There are not many generations where, you know, the father was a great collector, then the son is a great collector, then it's I don't know why it's like this, but it seems not to be a hereditary talent. I mean, there's these collectors near Torino. If anyone of you ever comes to the Torino Art Fair, many times they organize a tour there. And the foundation is called La Gaia. They make nails. As a family business, but they make nails for the whole of Europe. So they're
nails.
So they're nails, professional nails, screws, but they have the biggest nails production for the whole of Europe, and their business does very, very well. They've become passionate about art, and they have a collection which is like incredible. And now they have four grandchildren, a son and a daughter. There's not one person who is... not even running the foundation or playing around. I know the director who says, you know, I've tried going with the young ones to New York and they want to go and shop at Yamamoto and don't want to see the shows. And it's really something that, I mean, unless the passion hits you, it's something that you kind of feel the old guy is wasting the money on the art and they're making him stupid to buy art or something like this. But, for example, I know this guy in Genova who has a great collection, not very big. He used to have a restaurant. He became totally passionate about art. He wasn't very wealthy. And slowly, he kept buying, you know, artworks, paying a bit a month. And he has one of the most famous Boitti big sculptures, the zigzag. And he has a letter after that of Boitti who says, if you give me 1 million euro, which is like now 500 euros... I'll send you two of the embroideries. And he said, I didn't have 1 million euros, so 500 lira to spare, so I didn't get the embroideries. And now I'm like, such an idiot. And it's funny because he has some great pieces, of, you know, one of each, but often small in the house, and but all bought like this, now in 10 years of a passion going, but always knowing you have to buy it before it becomes great, because then you're not going to buy it. But I think... It's there are less and less great collectors. I mean, I think
it seems like there's more and more, but
more and more collectors, but they have advisors, and because of the prices,
the collection it keeps going because in some big exhibitions the rent or the works out, and then I just had my own experience with this color that there was one or two paintings in one exhibition in Berlin, then in Milan, then here in Tallinn, next in Krakow, and all time it went back home,
and then went
again into the exhibition, and all time in one of the room.
business.
It's a business, yeah, yeah, no, totally. But, I mean, I was, last year I was in, 2 years ago in Fries, and by chance I was at the, I think, a Gaussian stand when Mr. Pinault with his advisors came. And it was this kind of absurd comedy. The guy has like probably half an hour between two meetings where he's spending billions on companies. So he takes a cab, dashes to the island, and his advisors have 15 minutes to show him the works they've put on reserve, and he has to decide. So it's like, obviously they buy big works. Who's gonna, if you're the advisor, are you gonna use his 10 minutes to show him a little thing of an emerging artist, or are you gonna show him the Stingels for $500,000 each? So they go show him four big things, and in 10 minutes he says, this, yes, no, gone. And I was like, how can they be good collectors like this? I mean, even if you like it, you don't have the... And art is becoming so expensive that a lot of this collecting is like this. It's like hitting the big names off the market with advisors. And maybe the advisors are even good and they look for the good pieces, but the collector doesn't have the time to really enter the process of thinking why that art is important and why they should buy it, and you know, why they think that piece is important.
Probably somebody with less money would make
a better choice.
Choices that are
personal,
an extension of their own personality.
Which is why these are good collections. Now, instead, if you start saying, okay, what is in the new museum collection? Okay, I'm gonna buy, or what is at MoMA? What did MoMA buy last year? I want the same names. It becomes kind of really absurd. And also, I will think that it's always about buying the right piece, not the name. So, you know, you can buy the right artist and get a really bad artwork. Not all the artworks of the same artist are good. And this is something that people seem to forget, buying it as if it's stock and it's not the same. You can have a good piece by whoever and a bad piece. And, you know, even in the same medium, it's not that it's necessarily the same.
Finally, it's boring to find in every museum
all the same artist.
Exactly,
you find, and this is what's happening, they're becoming more and more uniformed collections. You go and see a Russian collection, a New York collection, they have exactly the same artist, which is a bit strange, you know?
Same people,
same people, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or same galleries where they shop. Quite young.
Yes. Okay, it's some kind of explosion.
Yes, I would say all after the 90s.
It's not that some kind of big tradition.
Usually not. Because the big traditions, when it's really that the family understands, you usually find an institution where you allow the collection to become public, because if you've really loved it and put a lot of energy, at the end you want people to share to look at it, and you know, after a bit, even if I've known strange collectors who keep everything in crates and don't have nearly anything at home. This collector once said, I don't even know if I have that Rauschenberg. I've never opened the crate since I bought it in the 70s. And I was like, why do you buy a Rauschenberg to keep it in a crate? But there are people who have this weird sense of possessing but not of consuming, and they buy art to keep it locked up. It's not so strange, eh? There are many collectors who
it's
buy
like and a bag in their home.
Yeah.
It's not money, it's a piece of paper.
Yeah, it's a certificate. They look at the certificate and are happy for what they have in the crate.